WAUK Jackson, Milwaukee's real news and great conversation. A Civic Media station.
CBS News Brief. Tallahassee police say a 20-year-old student brought his sheriff's deputy mother's retired service weapon to Florida State University, killed two people and injured six others before he was arrested. CBS's Skylar Henry.
Panicked students scrambled to safety. Some even ran through traffic, while others took cover inside their classrooms.
Upset with Fed Chair Jerome Powell's comments on the effects of tariffs on the economy, President Trump suggests he can remove Powell. CBS's Jan Crawford.
Trump argues that he has the power to do this under the Constitution, that these are agencies that perform executive functions. He's the head of the executive branch, and so Congress can't restrict him from removing these members.
A resentencing hearing for Eric and Lyle Menendez is postponed after an argument over a risk assessment document. Defense attorney Mark Aragos.
This is a case that cries out after 35 years for a reduction to a manslaughter and a release, immediate release.
CBS News Brief, I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
The Brewers beat the Tigers. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. Baseball, the Brewers with a 5-1 win over the Tigers. Milwaukee winning the series. Pat Murphy pleased with the performance from starting pitcher Jose Quintana.
He's so under control. Guys want to play behind him. You know, he didn't have his best stuff today. He didn't have his best command today. Walk three in the first inning. Very efficient after that.
Basketball, the Bucks head to Indianapolis tomorrow, where they'll face the Pacers in game one of their playoff series Saturday at noon. Women's volleyball, the Badgers with a 3-0 win over Marquette in straight sets. Head coach Kelly Sheffield says it was a good turnout at the Fieldhouse for the spring game.
I thought we had a great crowd tonight. The number of people that were here, I remember our first year here where there'd be some matches that there'd be half as many as what there were tonight. That's what we're hoping to do is continue to get to the point where even our spring matches are filling the entire building, you know, and then having the match covered on BTN.
That's Badgers volleyball coach Kelly Sheffield with sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
If you could change your name, if you could pick your own name, what would you change it to? Daniel Wheeler says, linguistically, Pete's last name is interesting because it requires a wet mouth. Requires a wet mouth to pronounce it correctly. Pete Schwabba, you have to have a wet mouth to say that? That sounds so perverse, Daniel.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
Your new choice. Real news. Great conversation. 540 WAUK.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to, lots to talk about the tariff stuff. Tariff stuff's interesting to me. As I've said numerous times and have taken some heat from, I'm not an anti-tariff guy. I think it's a good tool. I think if we use it properly, could do some really good things. Thought Joe Biden was using it fairly well. Could have been a little more aggressive, but moving in the right direction. We were reshoring manufacturing. We were doing some stuff. We were making good investments. And now this, massive chaos. And I had a listener ask me if I thought that Trump had already undermined his own tariff policy. And I'm like, of course. You can't have a system where... The funniest meme I saw was the Karate Kid, where, you know, wax on, wax off. Well, it's tariff on, tariff off. That's kind of where we've been in this bit of chaos. Which, understand, if you're a manufacturer, and let's say you want to come back to the U.S., let's say you're looking forward to there being some ability to manufacture in the U.S., this kind of bizarre uncertainty, maybe we are, maybe we aren't, maybe we're going to do, it's not what manufacturers are into, especially if they're going to be pouring a lot of money into a facility. Now, I argue tariffs should be a national security tool. If the pandemic taught us nothing, is we're overly reliant on China. We're reliant on a lot of other countries, yes, but overly reliant on China. And China knows that, which is why you're not seeing them doing the backup dance, which is why you're seeing them not cave. And Trump's gotten even more erratic. You know, we're going to have, you know, 50, 70, 100, blah. Yeah, now understand, as we talked about earlier in the week, I'm not against the idea of 900, 1,000% tariffs on China if it means that we get to source our military and our national security needs at home. Should have been doing that all along, considering we've got the Berry Amendment that says you should be making stuff here at home anyway. This is where I want to start. Now, the weird thing, and this is where it's really crazy, because everyone agrees this is going to cause mass chaos. This is going to cause economic chaos. And, you know, as we know, authoritarian types, people who don't fear the vote of the people, like our process is supposed to, they don't generally care about unrest. They don't care about, you know, a good economy, a bad economy. They don't care about really anything other than their own fragile egos. And I think we're seeing that from Trump, and Trump said already he doesn't care who this hurts. Now, I've had some people who say, well, I believe that he's doing it for the best interest of the country. And, you know, take some meds. Because the reality is, I don't see how. The fact that Trump has already exempted high-tech manufacturing from his tariff hikes kind of makes me wonder why, while simultaneously leaving tariffs on clothing and coffee beans. It somehow doesn't make any sense. There's no rational, no cogent argument to go, oh no, the high-tech stuff, no, you bring that in. But the coffee beans, no, we're gonna tariff those. It's as if someone whispered in his ear that, you know, this could happen. And it went from his ear to his mouth, like a lot of things. Because I think that's how policy is now done. People who have been dreaming up bad ideas for a very long time say something out loud, it goes in between Trump's ears, it rattles around, and it just comes flowing out. No thought process, no filter, no plan. Just in and out. Now, you go, but Rick, we do need to reshore manufacturing. You've been saying that, and I have. I agree. I think, you know, a country that doesn't make things dies. I think if you're dependent on the rest of the world for your value-added products, you've got problems. And we do. But this pathway, for me, is a struggle. Now, the other argument that's come up is saying, well, you know, Rick, you know, what they're doing is they're crushing unions. They're deregulating. In fact, just the other day, a story came out of the New York Times that there are more than, I guess, 400 agencies that are expected to basically gut, you know, tons of regulations that are going to affect each and every one of us every day. People from, you know, flying in planes to eating chicken. All bad. Because we've seen these movies before when the cop is no longer on the beat. We've seen what they do, what corporations do. And you hear it over and over, yeah, those are job-killing regulations. Never mind the fact that they're the people-killing lack of regulation and a lack of accountability and data. So if you look at what this administration is doing, what the game plan is crush any bit of information. Crush any bit of reporting, any bit of oversight, any bit of independent outlooks, and, well, allow the wonders of the invisible hand, if you will, of the free market. We've seen this before. We've read the books when people my age were back in high school. The books that they're now trying to ban, the things that they don't want you to see or hear or read, because it might remind you that, oh, hey, wait a minute, what they're doing, we've seen before, and it didn't end well for us. And none of what Trump is doing is going to end well for working people. None of it. Because it's not supposed to. The people that he has surrounded himself with are people who have spent decades working in right-wing think tanks dreaming up bad ideas and being paid handsomely for it. We're now living through their Super Bowl of, hey, look what we get to do. Look what regulations we get to crush. Look at what part of the 20th century we get to eliminate. We're going to see deregulation on such a mass scale that we're not going to be able to keep up with it all until it slaps us in the back of the head. And as I've been saying, the solutions to our problems are going to come from the suffering due to their savagery. What they are doing and what they're going to continue to do, that's what we're going to have to live through. And by organizing now, by coming around to the reality that bad things are going to happen and they're doing them as we speak, finding each other and organizing around that, getting good information that helps us find the solutions we need, that's how we're going to get through it. Can't run from it. You got to go head first right through it. And when we come back, Will Ragland from the Center for American Progress is going to be here to share a new, cool new tool. Going to let us know just how bad Doge and the ferrets are about ready to screw your neighborhood. Quick break, right back with Will Ragland.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors, the American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, tax day was just the other day, and well, tax avoidance by our billionaires. I'm kind of betting never going to be easier as Doge Boy and his ferrets are attacking the IRS with massive cuts. And I just saw a report just yesterday that a quarter of IRS employees are looking for the exit. So cheating by our wealth class, I'm betting it's going to accelerate. And look, this is just one victory for the Doge clan. What will a supposed cut of a trillion, or even now they've lowered their expectations down to, what, $150 billion? What's that going to mean to you and me? And do we know about it? Well, my next guest's got a cool new tool to track Elon and the Doge ferrets' harmful cuts by city, state, and even by congressional district. So how much harm is Doge doing to you, doing to we, the working people? That's why I've asked Will Ragland to come talk with us. Will is the Vice President of Research, Advocacy, and Outreach there at the Center for American Progress. Will, thanks for taking time for us.
Always, Rick. It's great to be here.
So cool new tool. I got to tell you, I like it because I was able to go to my congressional district, find out that 3.5% of the federal workforce lives in my neighborhood, and they're probably going to get screwed in millions of dollars that would flow into our schools and in our neighborhoods and our communities. Well, maybe not.
Yeah. You know, we've been hearing from the people all across the country about some of these impacts, and it seems like it's been this trying to taking this fire hose of bad news. So we tried to organize it for people to really delve in and divvy it up by congressional district, city, and state, so they have an idea of how these cuts are impacting their neighborhoods and communities. And we're looking to build on this, take feedback from from your audience, from anyone who's taken a look at it, we want to make this as easy to use as possible and make the data available and very easy to download, see Excel sheets. And we've got a nice map and table that is easy to search. We're looking to build on this and add things that maybe Doge isn't putting on their website, and other cuts that are starting to impact things, like the library and museum cuts that have just happened that are hitting our state libraries, or the manufacturing extension partnerships that they are not too keen on highlighting, given all this talk on reshoring and manufacturing, you know, all this talk with about manufacturing with tariffs, yet they're cutting, you know, key grants and investments that are propping up our domestic manufacturing domestically. So there's a lot of stuff going on, and we're trying to catch it for folks and give them a tool that'll help them advocate to stop it.
So you're the one taking the fire hose to the face of misinformation and all of the misdirection. Because I've looked at the Doge website. It ain't easy. And it does, it seems fairly vague. It seems really incomplete. It seems like some teenagers did it.
Yeah, I think that's by design, Rick. I'll say a lot of things about Elon Musk and probably some of the people that he surrounds himself with. But I will say they're probably pretty smart when it comes to tech. I'll give them that. And I think they're doing this by design. They don't want to be transparent. They want to have something that they can point to and say, look what I'm doing. But they aren't really being transparent. They are not. First off, they're putting they're hiding the stuff that they want to hide. They're making it extremely hard to navigate. And all we did was figure out a way to do that and make it easier for people to search. And we also put a little bit more information about each one of these grants and investments from USA Spending that is also publicly available. We just married the two, and people can get a better sense of where a lot of this is going.
For me, Elon lost me right from the very beginning. You may remember that Oval Office presser that they had where the people at the press are going, hey, your numbers are wrong. You've taken credit for things that, you know, really wrong. And Elon Musk said, well, you know, sometimes we're going to make mistakes, and it's your job to find those mistakes. And I'm going, hold on, wait a second. I don't know. That's not how it's ever worked for me. That's not how it works in the past. If you're making these claims, if you're being dishonest, and then you're saying, hey, well, catch me if you can, you've lost me. My trust in you is gone.
Yeah, I mean, that's really when we just kept hearing about reports that a lot of this stuff was hitting local food banks. We heard about it's local schools. We saw the state departments of health being hit, and a lot of research being killed at universities and hospitals. So we're like, okay, what's going on here? This seems odd. This doesn't exactly match up with what they say they're cutting. This doesn't seem like waste to me. So we just started digging in a little bit more and looking into what they've put out, and lo and behold, there's billions of dollars of cuts to core things that we expect the federal government to take care of.
Yeah, but I'm sure you've seen the memes, Will. You know, they paid $20,000 for someone to watch Russian cats walk on treadmills, or they pick little things out of certain spots. And then the memes are, you know what, we're spending money on this without asking, you know, well, why would they spend money on this? Who wrote the grant? What was the grant for? What was the purpose? I mean, we can't have that discussion. It's just a meme of there's someone getting $20,000 to watch a cat walk on a treadmill.
Yeah, I mean they've done this forever. I remember, it was the pork book. Senator Paul's kind of taken it over, and they'll find the smallest little thing, and then throw it up there and say, look what we're spending all this money on. Look, I'll be the first one to say that we should go after waste, fraud, and abuse. But here's the deal: Elon Musk set out to cut $1 trillion from the annual budget. If he did that, if he cut all non-defense discretionary spending, so all of the money that's not Medicare, Social Security, or Pentagon, if he cut every single bit of it, 100%, he'd still be $50 billion short on that goal. So it wasn't surprising to me or anyone else who knows a little bit about the federal budget that he's revised that down to $150 billion. And, we're really cutting the cartilage off the bone here. You know, there's not a ton to cut from that non-discretionary defense budget as it is. So, we're going to keep tracking it and working to hold them accountable as best we can.
Yeah, I asked this question yesterday because, again, they started off with, it's going to be $1 trillion. We're going to go and we're going to get rid of, we've got the scalpel, waste, fraud, and abuse. It's all going to go. And, it's going to be great. And then you're going to get Doge checks and it's going to be great. You're going to be amazing. It's going to be the best thing ever. And then they've, tapped down expectation. I would argue basically failed in their mission. But for me, the message should be actually the federal government spends money pretty reasonable. If by looking at what they've found, if this is it, this is what the whole hubbubaloo was about, isn't the message going, hey, maybe they're not as bad as the right has been telling us for so long?
I think what people are going to start to realize is, they're going to start to miss some core things that they may not even have known that the federal government did. For instance, our weather forecasts. There have been huge cuts to NOAA. All of your weather information that you pull up on your phone, that you watch on local TV, is based on federal data that is collected via weather balloons in a lot of cases. They've had to reduce the number of weather balloon launches that are going on in a bunch of regions of the country. That's going to make our weather forecasts less accurate.
But Will, yeah. That would make things much more fun, much more interesting. Don't you want to be surprised when that tornado comes? Wouldn't it be better if, when the hurricane comes, you go, oh, wow, I didn't know that was coming. Wouldn't the surprise be worth it?
not from where I sit, Rick, but
like 1,000 years ago when you, ooh, the gods are mad at us. Because these are the people who keep telling us bad things happen because God's angry. So why not do away with that stuff so it could be true?
I mean, hey,
I'm being facetious, obviously, but the reality is, this is where we are, man.
I know. No, I hear you. I think the most interesting part about this is a lot of these cuts are going to be hitting a lot of Trump voters, rural red areas, the hardest. I look at a place like Kentucky. All right. They're cutting massive swaths of education. We've talked about this before. And they attempted to try to move to a private school voucher program through a ballot referendum, which failed miserably and in every county. And we're seeing these awful floods through Appalachia and Kentucky. And what is the president talking about? He is actively getting rid of FEMA support and state grants that these areas will need to help recover from the disasters they've already seen and probably more to come. You pick an area, and I'll tell you where they're cutting, and how it's going to hurt. I mean, like our state departments of health, we have a ton of cuts that are coming across every state that are targeting things like drug counseling, substance abuse counseling and prevention, mental health counseling, mobile health van clinics. STI prevention, all of these things that they claim to have said that they care about, but don't really. So it is concerning. And then you look at some of the things that the federal government, only the federal government, can do well is, and that are things like in the research arena, things that no private corporation is going to spend the money required to find a cure for cancer, because it's just not profitable,
right?
It's not profitable to do those sorts of things. And they're cutting NIH grants. Flagship universities are getting, over $1 billion worth of cuts in some instances. I mean, you've seen what's happening with at Cornell and Harvard and Columbia. It's happening across the country, and it's impacting major research programs that are aiming to do big things, find a cure for Alzheimer's, find good treatments for Parkinson's. So I think that people are going to start to realize some of the things that the federal government actually does. I mean, we've seen it with air traffic control. We're going to see it with food and drug inspections and approvals. So,
and this is where I've been saying, well, there's an opportunity here for a political party, and I don't care who, to grab onto the message and go, look, the federal government does some good stuff. Am I thrilled with everything it does? No. Am I thrilled with what it's doing right now? Am I thrilled with what the Trump government is doing? No. But for the most part, the things that they're going after are things that have been decades in place, that have been funded and working for decades. Now they're trying to destroy it. And the only thing I can come back to is their love of the Gilded Age, where the billionaires had all the wealth and everyone else was, well, desperate and exploitable. And if bad things happen, you didn't know about it because we didn't do any data collection or record keeping or any of that stuff. So, hey, if cancer came, we could argue cancer rates are down because nobody's reporting it anymore. It's a weird world I see us moving into if they're allowed to continue this, which is why I think tools like the one that you've created are so valuable.
Yeah, I 100% agree. And, I'm by no means advocating for, the status quo. I think there's a lot of things we should be doing differently.
Sure.
And investing in the working people and creating better pathways to the middle class. The thing is, these cuts are being put in place on the backs of those same people, so that billionaire class can benefit. As you said, I mean, they're taking away the ability even just to measure where we are. They eliminated the entire research arm at the Department of Education, which tells us how well we're doing in math, how well we're doing in reading, what interventions are working, how many kids attend public schools. I think you're going to start to see more of that across agencies, not just investments to try and improve things, but investments just to measure where we are,
yeah,
how well we're doing in something or how poorly and how we can improve. So I think that's it's concerning. It's something we need to keep an eye on.
And to add to that, while Trump is, we're going to make coal great again. He shut down NIOSH, the reporting arm of for health and safety that tracks injuries and deaths, and a lot of MSHA offices, the Mine Safety and Health Administration, shutting a bunch of offices there. The reporting cutting down on. So as we're making coal production great again, we're probably going to make black lung and injuries and death great again.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think Trump's been paying attention on the coal front for the last two decades, because it wasn't anything that progressives really did there. It was natural gas that has moved coal off to the side. But be that as it may, yeah, I mean, what do we got here? We've got mine safety and health offices closing all across Appalachia. We have NIOSH offices closing. Learned today that they let DOGE just kind of go all over NLRB data to find case management files on labor organizers, activists, whistleblowers. So,
you mean the homegrowns?
See that I laugh, but that it is it's really terrifying, Rick. Seeing kind of what they've let DOGE do and all of our rummage through all of our data. It's really scary. I'm heartened to see a lot of the pushback that we're seeing across the country and regular people starting to stand up.
It is what we need. So last question, how do we find the tool and what's the most egregious thing that you've found while doing this work?
You can find the tool at AmericanProgress.org. It'll be on our homepage. You scroll down and you see a big map that has a bunch of red on it, which you can find. And I think one of the most egregious things that I've found while looking at this are actually military connected schools. So DODEA schools. These are schools that are on or near military bases that Hegseth has cut massive funding to. It's one of these under the radar things that they talk about, supporting vets and veterans. And there's quite a number of those cuts that I didn't expect to find. The big cuts to a program at USDA, which is a big funder of food banks in every state
and across the globe, right?
And USAID, there's a ton of cuts to USAID, but here domestically, there are big cuts to big food, to USDA programs that fund our food banks and food for schools that source local food from local farmers.
Yeah, those kids can just go to work and pick the food, and then they'll have some. You know, the work will do them good. Crazy, crazy world we're in. But, Will, I appreciate the time. Good talking with you. I hope folks will check out the tool at AmericanProgress.org. We'll get links out. Will Ragland, thanks so much.
Thank you, Rick.
Will is Vice President of Research, Advocacy, and Outreach there at the Center for American Progress. Check out the tool. It's interesting. And what's also interesting is a lot of red districts could be turning blue if this is accurate. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. Right back.
You're listening to Milwaukee's Real News and Great Conversation, 540 WAUK. Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Scattered storms this evening, some could be strong, still a shower or two overnight, and a low in the low 50s. Scattered storms still a possibility tomorrow, a high in the low 70s. Mostly dry and pleasant for the weekend, with highs in the 50s. Right now it's 53.
Matt Nair on air.
Deb Cronmiller from the League of Women Voters talking about the SAVE Act.
The kind of voter fraud that this SAVE Act is targeting would be non-citizen voter fraud.
There is no evidence of this. Zero.
Non-citizens, no. They're not eligible to vote.
There is no reason to increase these restrictions on voting except to stop people who might not vote for them.
Matt Nair on air. Moving soon to its new time. Weekday mornings 9 to 11 on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So as Republicans are going after the 20th century and all of the progress in it, we're seeing potential massive cuts to one of our main social safety net programs, Medicaid, and the group Protect Our Care. They've recently launched a multi-million dollar hands-off Medicaid campaign with the stated goal to stop, almost $1 trillion from being cut from Medicaid and then redistributed to our billionaires and big corporations in the form of massive tax breaks. Yeah, how do we stop that? And here to share some thoughts on how maybe we do that, I've asked Leslie Dock to come talk with us. Leslie is the chair of Protect Our Care. You can check out their website, protectourcare.org. Leslie, thanks for taking time for us.
Yeah, well, it's an important issue. Thanks for you taking the time.
So to steal a Bidenism, this is kind of a big freaking deal because there are millions of people who depend on this program, millions of seniors, millions of children, the breadth of our economy. Folks need this, and I don't know, $1 trillion seems like an awful lot to be ripped out of it.
Yeah, without doubt. I think let me talk for a second about these numbers so that people understand. I mean, there are 72 million Americans who count on Medicaid for their health care, and each of them has a family who worries about them or has to take care of them when they're sick. Over 30 million children in America get their health care through Medicaid. 40% of all births, 60% of nursing home care, over 1 million veterans with severe health issues, and working people who work one or two or three jobs, but whose employers don't pay them enough or give them health insurance. So this is the largest healthcare system in America. The Republicans like to act as if it's people who are lazy. The fact is, these are people who are working hard for a living and just can't afford their health insurance, or they're so disabled that they can't work.
Or bad things happen. And this has always been an issue that's been near and dear to my heart and our heart here at the show, because it is about taking care of the vulnerable, the least among us, the downtrodden, the people who are just unlucky But here recently in our family, this has become now a central issue, because back in September, my wife was in a near fatal motorcycle accident, and she's going to need care probably for the rest of her life. And we're now going through part of the process to go through this Medicaid waiver program, which is insane. So all the people who say, you know, it's all filled with waste, fraud, and abuse, I'm here to tell you, it ain't that easy to get through.
Well, first, I'm so sorry to hear. I hope she's going to do well.
We're giving her every opportunity to lead what will be a functional life. But at the end of this, if she does need round-the-clock 24-hour care for the rest of her life, you know, I fully plan on her outliving me. What's that going to mean? And this is the kind of very real situations that Americans across this country have to deal with.
Yeah. I mean, what the Republicans don't understand is, you know, because most of them, you know, in Congress have nice health insurance, they don't understand what real life is. And they're more interested in sort of pleasing Donald Trump than they are in pleasing their own voters. That's the most amazing part of this. So, you know, what they want to do is to basically take $1 trillion out of Medicaid, which is going to mean that people are going to lose their health care. There's no other way to do it. And they don't care. So I think, you know, the way we win this is by, we have to pressure and educate and pressure a small number of Republicans in the House and in the Senate. And they know that they're doing the wrong thing. They know their constituents don't like it, but they don't have the guts to stand up. So these so-called moderates in the House and Senate are basically just sworn their allegiance to Donald Trump. Yeah. They don't have the guts to tell the truth to their voters. And, you know, the conservatives don't mind. They'll slow anything down to get to squeeze more taxes, tax breaks for the rich. And the regular people who call themselves moderates cower somewhere in a corner. But, you know, we need to just beat the crap out of those people in a nonviolent way to, you know, do the right thing. Because you know what? Republicans care as much about Medicaid the same way Democrats do. 40% of Republicans and 40% of Trump voters actually say that they or someone in their family has been on Medicaid. So, and it affects rural America as much as it does urban America. So this is not a Democrat or Republican issue. It's an issue for everyday Americans who work hard, who have gotten, unfortunately, some severe medical condition, who are only going to be able to make it through with Medicaid.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's taking us back to, and I say this all the time, they want to take us back to the good old days of the 80s and 90s, and not the 1980s and 90s. They want to take us back to a desperate era that they pine for. Look, you know, Donald Trump has talked at length about how the 1870s were the golden age of America, where none of this stuff existed. So as you're reaching out to these Republicans, and obviously you've launched this campaign, you know, what's the message that you're getting to them? And, you know, what's the message? And who are they so that our audience can, well, pick up the phone and reach out and touch somebody?
Well, anybody with a Republican, you know, member of Congress, senator or a congressperson should get a call because we're getting some support from strange places. But we need to turn it into actual votes. I'm going to give you an example of how crazy a political issue this is. So there's a congressman in California. I'm just going to look at my numbers, but named David Valadao. He won his seat last year by a margin of 11,461 votes. He has in his one congressional district 500,649 people on Medicaid. And that doesn't include their families who are suffering with them or worrying with them. So this is a, you would think they would decide with their constituents over.
One would think, but you know, I keep coming back to this. They don't seem to care about the ballot box because I think they think they've already rigged it so it doesn't matter what we the people want.
Yeah,
and that's the scary part.
Donald Trump than they are of their own voters.
Right,
but they know it. You know, they know that because what are they doing? They're lying now. You know, they're lying that there's waste, fraud, and abuse in the system when actually all the statistics show that Medicaid is actually the most efficient healthcare system of any, far more efficient than any other healthcare system, public or private.
Yeah, it's extremely cumbersome to navigate to get to it. So this idea that, you know, everyone gets it is kind of, well, wrong. But here's the part that gets me, Leslie. And this is where, you know, I have a lot of my Republican friends who wear their religiosity on their sleeves. I'll tell me how godly they are, how this is a Christian nation, how all of this stuff, you know, how they believe all of this stuff. And yet this, you know, you give me words, but these actions, I don't know, these actions speak much louder than those empty words.
I mean, these are people who work hard. They're our neighbors. They're our family. And they got sick. They didn't do anything wrong. They got sick.
Or they just got old. One
day. They had an accident. And now we want to just leave them to bleed out on the floor. And it's just not right. And in order to give a, you know, $5 trillion tax break to the most wealthy and the largest corporations in America, that's our values.
Well, you got to have priorities, Leslie. Got to have priorities. So let me ask you this, because this is what I've been really struggling with. If you'd asked me, you know, 15 years ago, if I thought we're a country that would be willing to watch someone die on the sidewalk, I would have said absolutely not. I don't know that that's my answer today. I do believe there's a large segment of our population who would be willing to watch Granny die on the sidewalk when we throw her out of the nursing home because we've gutted $1 trillion in Medicaid funding. Do you have any thoughts?
Well, I think clearly, if you just look at our elected officials, that's what they believe. They believe there are no consequences for them to do this atrocity to people for no reason at all. So I think, unfortunately, a lot of our politicians are exactly willing to see that happen, and then they'll deny it.
Yeah, because look, you know, cuts aren't new. This isn't new. I remember back in 2011, we had Governor Tom Corbett, newly elected here in Pennsylvania, and they wanted to slash the HHS budgets that, you know, helped the poor, the disabled. And I remember people, you know, in the Capitol saying, "Look, you know, I'm a quadriplegic in a wheelchair. You're going to take my $200 away?" Yes, and that's what they wanted to do. So this isn't new. Why is now different? Is it the size of it? Is it the scope of it? Or is there something more?
I think in our politics, it's that people are more afraid of Donald Trump than they are of their voters. And also that this right-wing group in the House and in the Senate, they don't care about people. They want to sort of take our economy and give it to the rich and the wealthy and the Elon Musks. And they have absolutely no concern about average people, just none. And they're willing to block legislation in order to have their way. So I think we have no Republicans who stand up to Donald Trump, none.
Well, I think, you know, Republicans have learned the lesson. I mean, look at Liz Cheney and Adam Kinzinger. Everyone's looking at them as cautionary tales. Nobody wants to lose their gig, man. They got a cushy gig. All they got to do is go along to get along.
Yeah. And one thing they have is health insurance for the rest of their lives. So, what do you think that is?
So you don't see any profiles in courage over there?
None. Not yet. I mean, there's some that say they are. We'll see. That's why our campaign's working, is to get people from, you know, false rhetoric to real action. We think we can. And look, you know, we're going to do everything we can to cut, to stop these cuts. But then these people are going to face the voters. And that, you know, there's going to be a lot of angry people out there. No, we want people to be healthy.
Absolutely. And look, in the wealthiest country on the planet, at its wealthiest moment in history, this shouldn't even be discussed. Giving people access to care should be a given, but here we are in this moment where we're talking about kicking millions of people off of health insurance, Granny out of nursing homes, children, you know, what is it, half of the babies born in this country are paid for with Medicaid. We're talking about that while you've got Doge Boy running around worth almost, what, $400 billion? It seems like our priorities are a little mixed up.
Yeah. You think giving $5 trillion to the richest among us and the biggest corporations is more important? And therefore, you're going to take away healthcare from tens of millions of people in order to pay for that? and you're not even, you know, you're willing to blow a hole in the deficit. But no, when it comes to people's health care, who are a little bit less fortunate than you are, they're all in. Take it away. We can't afford it.
Let me ask you this from a different direction, because clearly there are going to be some people out there. I don't care. It's not me. It doesn't affect me. Don't care. I want my dose check. This will trickle down. This tax cuts don't trickle down. This will trickle down, because as we increase in uncompensated care for people, and maybe we're just going to keep people to Skid Row or have them die on the streets. But this is going to raise the costs of care for everybody, even people who do have decent insurance.
Without doubt, that is what's going to happen. And also, rural hospitals are going to close, because these hospitals have high populations of people they take care of on Medicaid. Their Medicaid is a very cheap payer. It's compared to like Medicaid Advantage, which the Republicans, by the way, are happy to give a pay raise to, even though it's the most corrupt of all of the healthcare systems out there. That doesn't bother them. They will just do that. And this will cause rural hospitals to close. It will force people to have to drive in when they're in an emergency, hundreds of miles to get to a hospital. Those hospitals are not reopened. So not only is it increasing the cost, it's going to shut down the healthcare systems in rural America.
Now, what do you say to the person? Because I've got some lefty friends who are like, well, good, this is what they voted for. Is that who we are on the other side?
Well, I can speak for myself, and I think all the people I work with. We, you know, our goal here is to save people's health care. That's the goal. Unfortunately, I wouldn't be surprised if the best we can do is to, you know, we only need four votes. So the people who want to be terrible, let them be terrible. And the people who want to do the politics, we'll have plenty of places to go. Yeah. We only need four people to stand up and do the right thing.
Last question. What's the marching order out of this? When people are done listening to Leslie Dock explain all of the stuff that you've talked about, what do you want them to take away? What do you want them to do?
Yeah, I want them to reach out to their members of Congress and Republicans and say, look, no cuts to Medicaid. We totally oppose this. It's going to cost you our vote. You know, we're not voting for you if you do this. And don't hide behind these excuses.
Yeah, and this also, Leslie, is where you guys got to get out in the street. As part of the hands-off movement, I think this is another one of those things. Hands off our Social Security, hands off our Medicare, hands off the Medicaid as well. Hands off our government. This has got to be an uprising of we the people, yep, demanding what we want and what we, I hate using the word deserve, but as citizens, what we deserve.
Yeah, yeah. What a great country could do for the hard work, you know, for people.
Yep. There you go.
And you know, we are doing everything we can. I mean, you know, there aren't massive rallies like there might be for some other issues, but you know, we are in front of these congressional offices with people visiting them, standing outside their offices, telling them that they need help. Yep. Storytellers flying into Washington. So everybody here who believes in this issue, or this 72 million people and their families who are at risk, need us, you know, speaking up is the most powerful weapon we have.
Those are 72 million stories that I know somebody's got to resonate with. But Leslie, I appreciate the work that you do. Thanks so much for coming on and talking with us. Leslie Dock, chair of Protect Our Care. Check out the website, protectourcare.org. Leslie, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Want to hear your thoughts. Is an issue near and dear to your heart? Do you know someone who, well, is on Medicaid, feared of losing it? I got a bunch of people reaching out scared. And we shouldn't be. Rick at the ricksmithshow.com. I want to hear it. Back after this. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1912. That was a day of tragedy for workers in the gold fields of Serbia. Gold miners by the Lena River in southeast Serbia worked under brutal conditions. The Lena Gold Mining Joint Stock Company ran the mining operation. The lucrative gold mines lined the pockets of shareholders, including Russian aristocrats and British industrialists. But the workers saw very little of the bounty they mined. They toiled for 16 hours a day for low wages. To make matters worse, workers were often paid in coupons they could cash in for food at the company store. The quality of the food was poor. A staggering 700 accidents occurred for every 1,000 workers in the mines. At the end of February, when one group of workers was given rancid meat, they had finally had enough. The workers walked out on strike. Soon they were joined by thousands of their comrades. They formed a strike committee and demanded an 8-hour day, 30% wage increase, better food, and improved workplace conditions. At first, the company agreed to talk to the workers, but negotiations went nowhere. Troops were called in and arrested the entire strike committee. Workers rallied to demand the release of their leaders. A crowd of 2,500 striking workers gathered. The troops fired into the unarmed crowd, wounding an estimated 500 workers and killing more than 250. As outraged workers across the country learned of the massacre, a wave of workers' strikes and protests swept throughout Russia. On May Day, 300,000 workers marched in the streets for the 8-hour day. The gold miners continued their strike throughout the summer, but to no avail. Thousands eventually left the gold fields to find less brutal work elsewhere.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Stop and think about all the millions of people that are going to lose access to care if this $880 billion to $1 trillion in cuts happens. Imagine what that's going to look like. Imagine when you've got some 72 million people affected who are right now on Medicaid, because this is our safety net. This is as close to national health care as we're going to get, where if you are poor, if bad things happen, if you're elderly and you're broke, this is where it goes. If bad things happen to you, and look, it could happen to anyone. And I use myself as an example. I grew up as a kid growing up in a housing project on the west side of Cleveland, needed help from Medicaid. It's how, when I had an asthma attack that almost killed me, it's how I was able to stay in a hospital for 2 weeks. It's how when bad things happen, you got care. Especially being, like I said, growing up in poverty, it was the lifeline. And all of these social safety net programs, these helping hand programs, I look back at and go, thank goodness they were there. Helped me achieve part of what I've achieved. Gave me the opportunity to thrive. And it's what I want for everybody. See, the weird thing is I'm not one of those people who go, wow, helped me. And you know what with you? No, this is reaching back and making sure that, I've been fortunate, making sure that everyone has some bit of good fortune. And like I said to Leslie, 15 years ago, you'd asked me, are we a country that would allow people to die on the street corner? I would have said emphatically, no, we're better than that. I don't know that today. I look at our elected leaders and I don't know that. I don't know that to be the case. Now, as I said, look, I never thought I was ever going to need anything again. And personally, I don't. My wife, who something really bad happened to, wasn't her fault. Wrong place, wrong time. Careless woman, not paying attention, drove a van right over my wife while she was riding her motorcycle. It is a miracle that she's alive. But as it's looking, she's going to need constant supervision for the rest of her life. She's going to need access to constant care for the rest of her life. Could have happened to anybody. Could have happened to you. Could have happened to your neighbor. Could have happened to a friend or family member. Could have happened to anybody. It just happened in this occasion. It happens to be my wife. Now, I'm fortunate that we have some resources. I have a good union job. We have a strong family unit. We're going to figure out how to be okay. And we're going to work like hell to do that. But a little help would be nice. A little security in knowing that if I do pass before her, that she's going to be taken care of, that she's going to be okay. I used to believe we were a society that thought that way. And the fact that this is even a discussion is something that each one of us have to look inside of ourselves and go, is this who we are? Is this us? And the fact that I'm not seeing the kind of outrage over this that I would expect. And I don't know. I've had some people say, oh, they're just bluffing. They won't really do it. I've had people who look at, you know, people like Leslie Dock's campaign and say, oh, you know, that's just how they raise money. They're just overblowing this. No, they're deadly serious. Because understand, these are people who are against it from the beginning. These are people who were against it from the very start. They were against Medicare. They were against Medicaid. They were against Social Security. They were against labor laws. They were against virtually the entire 20th century. These are people who pine for 19th century dictatorial wealth class power. It's who they are. Because it's who's lining their pockets. Until, obviously, something bad happens to them. And in a country of, what, 300 and some million, when 72 million people depend on this one thing, it's kind of a big deal. And to say, oh, well, you know, we're not really cutting it, because this is kind of the argument. Well, we're not really cutting it. We're just going after the waste, fraud, and abuse. And what would that be? Would that be granny in the nursing home? Would that be the children who are born? Because you're not in favor of contraception. So, I mean, I could see it. You go, well, we're going to cut down on the number of babies being born, and that should help. We're going to invest in some contraception. That might help. No, we're not doing that. In fact, we're doubling down on the other direction, wanting people to have more children and not giving them an avenue to say, well, you know, this is how you have them. So I'm curious because, look, I've gotten, you know, some responses from people. A lot of people in the disability community, a lot of people who have disabilities who are going, look, I'm scared to death that they're going to take what little Social Security money I get because I can't find a job because unemployment for the disabled is through the roof. I need the care because, well, I can't get a job because, again, unemployment for the disabled community through the roof because, again, we don't have a public sector that goes, if the private sector refuses to create enough jobs or claim they can't, the public sector does that. No, we don't do any of that, because that'd be socialism. And of course, socialism is bad. Much like Medicaid, Medicare, Social Security, all that socialism. Because, you know, we can pull ourselves up by our bootstraps. So the question comes back to, once again, what do you do when it's gone? Because once they kill it, it will be generations before we get anything back. Now, as I said to Leslie, you know, this isn't new. Republicans have been trying to kill it through death of a thousand paper cuts. We got to kill it in order to save it. This is, for me, this is bigger. This is them coming right out and saying, look, you know, we don't care about you. We don't care about your family. We don't care about your sick children. We don't care about your elderly grandparents. We don't care about any of that. What we care about, profit. Care about profit. Care about the bottom line being the wealth class needs more and more and more. And yet here we are again, ensuring that the Elon Musks of the world can line their pockets at the expense of the rest of us. When will we wake up? When will we say no more? When will we stop all of this? That becomes the question, doesn't it? And the hope is soon. The hope is we wake up fairly soon. But I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Miss any portion of the program, make sure you grab the podcast. Or if you get your favorite podcast, you'll find ours. And as always, thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. Rick@thericksmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
This is 540 WAUK Jackson, Milwaukee's real news and great conversation. A Civic Media station. This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper. Shots fired on the Florida State University campus in Tallahassee earlier today.
We got the desks and started piling them up against the door. It was pretty hectic.
Two people are dead, six injured, and the suspect is in the hospital after being shot by officers. CBS's Scott McFarland.
There are a number of students on that campus today who were students at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas in 2018, who were freshmen at that campus and have now gone through two of these things.
The suspect is an FSU student and is the son of a sheriff's deputy. And Tallahassee Police Chief Lawrence Revelle says the suspect used his mother's former service weapon.
A lot of times, many agencies, mine included, when we transition to a new handgun, the officers are allowed to purchase the handgun they used prior. And correct me if I'm wrong, Sheriff, but I believe that's the case here. This was a handgun that deputy used prior to them transitioning to a new handgun.